an M-42 glowing in Orion's sword. Stars are fires that burn for thousands of years. Some of them burn slow and long like red dwarfs. Others, blue giants, burn their fuel so fast they shine across great distances and are easy to see. As they start to run out of fuel, they burn helium, grow even hotter, and explode in a supernova. Supernovas. They're brighter than the brightest galaxies. They die, but everyone watches them go. Earlier, after we ate, I helped Sarah clean up in the kitchen. "You think something's going on with Anna?" I asked, moving the ketchup back into the fridge. "Because she took off her necklace?" "No," I shrugged, "just in general."
"Compared to Kate's kidneys and Jesse's sociopathy, I'd say she's doing fine."
"She wanted dinner over before it started." Sarah turned around at the sink.
"What do you think it is?"
A guy?" Sarah glanced at me.
"She's not dating anyone."
"Thank God." "Maybe one of her friends said something to upset her."
Why was Sarah asking me? What the hell did I know about the mood swings of 13-year-old girls?
Sarah wiped her hands on a towel and turned on the dishwasher.
"Maybe she's just being a teenager."
I tried to think back to what Kate was like when she was 13, but all I could remember was the relapse and the stem cell transplant she had. Kate's ordinary life had a way of fading into the background, overshadowed by the times she was sick.
"I have to take Kate to dialysis tomorrow," Sarah said. "When will you get home?"
"By 8. But I'm on call, and I wouldn't be surprised if our arsonist struck again."
"Brian," she asked, "how did Kate look to you?"
"Better than Anna did," I thought.
But this wasn't what she was asking.
She wanted me to measure the yellow cast of Kate's skin against yesterday. She wanted me to read into the way she leaned her elbows on the table, too tired to hold her body upright. "Kate looks great," I lied, because this is what we do for each other.
"Don't forget to say goodnight to them before you leave," Sarah said, and she turned to gather the pills Kate takes at bedtime.
It's quiet tonight. Weeks have rhythms all their own, and the craziness of a Friday or Saturday night shift stands in direct contrast to a dull Sunday or Monday. I can already tell. This will be one of those nights where I bunk down and actually get to sleep.
"Daddy?"
The hatch to the roof opens, and Anna crawls out.
"Red told me you were up here."
Immediately I freeze. It's 10 o'clock at night. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing. I just wanted to visit."
When the kids were small, Sarah would stop by with them all the time. They'd play in the bays around the sleeping giant engines. They'd fall asleep upstairs in my bunk. Sometimes, in the warmest part of the summer, Sarah would bring along an old blanket, and we'd spread it here on the roof, lie down with the kids between us, and watch the night rise. "Mom know where you are?"
"She dropped me off."
Anna tiptoes across the roof. She's never been all that great with heights, and there's only a 3-inch lip around the concrete. Squinting, she bends to the telescope.
"What can you see?"
"Vega," I tell her. I take a good look at Anna, something I haven't done in some time. She's not stick straight anymore. She's got the beginnings of curves. Even her motions, tucking her hair behind her ear, peering into the telescope, have a sort of grace I associate with full-grown women. "Got something you want to talk about?"
Her teeth snag on her bottom lip, and she looks down at her sneakers. "Maybe, instead, you could talk to me," Anna suggests.
So I sit her down on my jacket and point to the stars. I tell her that Vega is a part of Lyra, the lyre that belonged to Orpheus. I'm not one for stories, but I remember the ones that match up with the constellations. I tell her about this son of the sun god whose music charmed animals and softened boulders. A man who loved his wife, Eurydice, so much that he wouldn't let death take her away. By the time I finish, we're lying flat on our backs.
"Can I stay here with you?"